Tonight, our real purpose for having a service is not so much to celebrate, which we'll do on Sunday, but it's to remember what Jesus went through on that Friday. So let me pray, and then I want to ask you a question about that Friday that maybe you haven't considered before. God, thank you for the blessing and opportunity that we have to be together. Thank you for why we're here. Although it's a sad day, it's a day that means a lot, as we'll talk about this coming Sunday, Easter, as we celebrate the fact that you're alive. But today we focus not on the fact that you're alive, but on the fact that you died. And that was a real event. It wasn't pretend. It really took place. And everything we read in the scriptures is factual about your arrest and, quote, trial and beatings and your death on the cross. Today, help us to look at that with fresh eyes and to learn from what took place, maybe in a way we haven't before, that we might be impacted and changed and look at Easter differently. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Let me ask you a question as we get started. And I won't take volunteers for this one, okay? What's been the absolute worst, most distressing moment in your life? Take a minute and go back there to that moment. It's probably not often you ask someone to ask you to do that, but what's the hardest thing that you've ever faced? The moment that you face the most strain, stress, pressure, so much that maybe you weren't sure you could make it through it. My guess is it doesn't matter how old you are, you've had something like that that's been extremely difficult. Take a minute and remember what it was like to feel the way you felt that day. Maybe it was the death of a family member, or an accident, or a diagnosis. The list could go on and on and on, but there's been something extremely hard. Now, what do you think Jesus' most distressing moment was? If we were to read through the Gospels, what's the moment that we see him where he seems to face the most strain and the most pressure? Well, I believe that moment took place in an orchard. And it's that moment that I want to talk with you tonight about. If you brought a Bible, look at Matthew 26. If you didn't, that's okay. We'll have the verses on the screen. But in Matthew 26, we see Jesus as he's never been seen before. And I want to see if we can walk through that together. We find Jesus in Matthew 26 in a place called the Garden of Gethsemane. Really, it was an olive orchard. Here's what it looks like. Throw one of those pictures up there. This is an area within the Garden of Gethsemane. And this is an actual olive tree that would have been alive and present when Jesus was there. Isn't that incredible to think about? A 2,000-year-old tree. I don't think you have any like that in your yard, if you have any trees at all. But go to the next picture, if you would. This is a little further to the east. This is probably more what it looked like when it wasn't tended, didn't have nice flowers around it, and looked down on the city. The olive trees were probably about this size at that point. So Jesus went to this place, if you know the story. He went there to pray. And here in the garden, or in the olive orchard, the calm, authoritative, always poised Jesus finds himself in utter terror. Let's look at that together in verse 36. Matthew 26, verse 36. Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And taking with him Peter and two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain with me here and watch with me." And going a little further, he fell on his face, praying, "My Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. That had to be encouraging, right? You get two of your friends and ask them to pray on what's the most distressing night you've ever faced. And they're snoozing. He said to Peter, "So could you not keep watch with me for 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Again, for the second time, he went away and prayed, "My Father, if this cup pass, if this cup cannot pass, unless I drink it, your will be done." And he came again and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. He left again and went away a third time, saying the same thing once more. One of the other Gospels tells us that he was in so much agony that his capillaries were bursting and he sweat drops of blood. He was in that much anguish. So, why is my question. Why was Jesus in so much anguish and distress in the garden? Have you ever stopped to think about that? Have you ever wondered? I mean, as I read those words, I almost find myself asking, is this the same guy? I mean, we've never seen him before like this. Is this the same guy who walked on water, who stood up to the Pharisees over and over and over again, who healed people at will, who in holy anger expelled people from the temple, who claimed to have the authority to forgive sin, who called God his very Father, who averted attempt to make him king by force, who went into his own hometown, preached in his own home church, and then was nearly mobbed. And in every single one of those cases, he was calm, smooth, steady. And here, he's in anguish and he's falling on his knees. What in the world is going on with Jesus? Well, let me give you some possibilities. Maybe it was the betrayal that he was about to face. Have you ever had a really good friend turn on you? A really close friend? Well, imagine having one of your very own turn on you to the extent that he traded you in for money. And then but a few moments later, all your 11 other friends would completely desert you. At the moment you needed them the most, they're gone. So maybe it was that. Maybe it was the grief that he knew was coming. I mean, would you feel grieved if the very people that you came to rescue, to save, your own people, your own countrymen, would turn on you and have you killed? I think that would cause some distress, some difficulty. Maybe it was fear. Now, let's not even think about the execution itself, the execution on the cross. Let's think about the things that led up to it for a minute. Just moments after Jesus prayed this, he heard the guards coming. He was shackled. He was taken to a house and thrown in a pit. And that pit still exists today. Here's a picture of it. This is inside the high priest's home. And while the trial was going on, Jesus would have initially been thrown down into this pit. And what you can't probably see from where you are is all the scars on the top where they would drag people back out with a rope. Now that's what it looks like with lights from the bottom as you're standing in it. But here's what it would have looked like to him. Okay? So Jesus is down in this hole. The closest thing I can even picture it to is an outhouse. I mean, that's about the size of the hole, and it's just filth. And it's hewn out of rock. And he can hear them discussing their plan to have him killed. Then he would be beaten, blindfolded, taken away. He'd be tied to a post. His back would be shredded to pieces from a whip with pieces of bone and metal attached to it. Then he'd have to carry a cross. He'd be nailed to it. It would be slammed into the ground. And then he'd slowly suffocate to death. I think that would be a cause for stress, for agony. So maybe it was that physical torture that he knew was coming. But let me tell you what it's not. Okay, it could have been in any of those things. It's not just that Jesus is just now figuring out what's going to happen, right? Let me give you 2 points just to drive that home real quick. It was common knowledge that Jesus had become a hotbed of controversy. And the very epicenter of that controversy was Jerusalem. So there's a fault line, if you will, and it's running right into town. And yet, where did Jesus want to set his face to go? It was to Jerusalem. In Mark, it says this, that they were on the road going to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking on ahead of them. They were amazed, and those who followed were fearful. So you get the picture? The disciples and those that were with Jesus knew probably what was going to happen if you went to Jerusalem. They didn't quite get it, but they knew something not good was going to go down. And Jesus is out leading the pack. They're walking behind in fear. Again, he took the 12 aside and began to tell them what was going to happen to him. He'd known for years and years and years. And then, right before this scene in the garden, we see Jesus serving the first communion, or the first Lord's Supper. And he very clearly illustrates and says what's going to take place. So, he knows, right? So, this is not that Jesus is just realizing, is just coming to grips with the fact that he's going to be killed. So, if it's not that he didn't just realize it, then what is it? Well, I don't believe it's any of those things that I named. I don't think it was fear. I don't think it was the sense of being rejected by the Jews. I don't think it was dread over the physical pain that he was about to endure. I think it was something far worse, something much worse. Now, the clue to this is back in verse 39. Can you throw that up there for us, Sean? Let this cup pass from me. What does that mean? Is he saying, Father, if there's another way, then I just want some other kind of beverage to drink during this whole ordeal? That's the way we use the phrase, the cup, right? But Jesus used it differently, and it's used differently in the Bible. The clue to why Jesus was in so much anguish is what's inside the cup. And inside the cup isn't the physical torture. It's not the fact that his 12 friends would desert him. It's not the fear of the pain. It's something far worse. Yet it's something that we might have never even considered. In the Old Testament, the phrase cup, the cup, is often a symbol of the wrath of God. And it's symbolic. And when it often uses the phrase, drink this cup, it means that you're going to take on the wrath or the discipline of God. So Jesus, as he looked into the cup, what he saw was the wrath and the desertion of the Father. upon him. And it caused him so much inner turmoil that he says he nearly died, just at the thought of it. Now, that may not seem that intense to you and to me, but remember who Jesus is. Has Jesus in eternity ever been at odds with the Father? Has Jesus in all eternity not been completely connected to the other two parts of the Trinity? Has Jesus in all eternity ever had any sin that blocked, impeded his relationship with the Father? None. Absolutely. Never. They were always like this. You and I are born the exact opposite, right? So we can have some sense of what it's like to live apart from God, at odds with God, but not like Jesus. Not like the one who had always been fully connected in every way. And here at the cross, here at the garden, we see him looking in the cup because he knew he was going to take on the sins of the world. And that your sin and my sin would be put upon him. And that therefore the punishment that we deserve, that alienation, that rejection from God, that wrath of God, he would take. And although he was part of this very plan from the very beginning, as he stood face to face with it, it was more than he could bear. He knew that he would take on God's wrath. And I think what caused him to recoil the most is that he knew he would be abandoned by the Father. He knew that he would hang on the cross all alone. And he'd never been alone. Now, how do we know that? John 8 says this, "He who sent me is with me. He has not left me alone, for I always do the things that are pleasing to him." Or John 16, "Behold, an hour is coming and has already come for you to be scattered, each one to his own home, and to leave me alone. And yet I'm not alone, because the Father is with me." What gave Jesus courage to do some of the things he did and to stand up in the way he did was the fact that he was never alone, and he'd never been alone. The Father was always with him. And yet now he came face to face with the reality that for the first time ever, he would be all alone. Now, why would he be all alone? He would be all alone because he would bear sin. And God must turn away from sin. God must discipline. He must pour out his wrath. And he must separate himself from that which is evil. That's why Jesus said on the cross in Mark, my God, why have you forsaken me?" God had to remove his presence from Jesus because he was judging sin. Now here's the hardest part of this for us. We're to blame. Each one of us in this room has sinned. We've all fallen short, as Roger read earlier. We have all missed the mark of what God wanted for us. And so the very things that Jesus felt in the garden, that most distressing night for him, he felt in part because of us. And our hope and prayer is that tonight and tomorrow, and tomorrow night, as we remember the fact that Jesus died and he was stuck in a tomb, that we'll remember that that happened because in pure, complete love, he willingly faced being completely alone rejected, and bearing the sin of the whole world.